We thank you so much for coming this evening or this afternoon, whether you've personally been touched by the issue of gun violence or if you're concerned about what you read about and see in the news. You know, I personally came to this issue after Sandy Hook. As a new mom, I was devastated by what happened and wanted to see how I could get involved to make a difference. And I'm so incredibly fortunate that I'm able to work with our supporters and volunteers every day to fulfill our mission. Our mission is to make North Carolina safe from gun violence through educating the public about preventing gun violence, enforcing current laws, and enacting needed new laws. We were founded back in 1993 when, unfortunately, a jogger was shot and killed in Chapel Hill, and Congressman David Price's wife, Lisa Price, founded the organization because at the time there was no other gun violence prevention organization, state-based organization, here in North Carolina. So she got involved, and next year will be our 25th anniversary. Today I'm going to talk a little bit more about gun violence statistics, some myths around guns and gun violence, talk about national and state-based legislation, and then talk a little bit more about how you can get involved. So unfortunately, in 2014, there were 33,595 firearm deaths, and 21,386 of those were suicides. So majority of our gun deaths are suicides. And unfortunately, that number from 2014 has risen to more than 38,000 in 2016. Now, if we look at gun violence deaths compared to automobile deaths, the statistic is rather alarming. You know, for a while, if we look at on a graph, automobile-related fatalities were up here, firearm-related fatalities were here, but now we're seeing those lines coming together, and in 21 states and the District of Columbia, firearm fatalities are outpacing automobile fatalities. And this is an interesting statistic for two reasons. One, because with automobiles, we see that people, or that our government, has invested a lot into research for the safety of drivers and the safety of cars, and have implemented common sense solutions and legislation. Unfortunately, the Centers for Disease Control has virtually been barred from doing the same kind of research into the public health crisis of gun violence, and we haven't seen that many new laws on the national level. Now I want to talk a little bit more about gun violence and mass shootings. The FBI defines a mass shooting as any shooting incident in which a single shooter kills or injures four or more people, not including the shooter. And as of November 7th, the Texas shooting was the 307th mass shooting in 2017 and the largest in Texas modern history. Now there's a myth out there that mass shootings are always random. But mass shootings may appear to be random, but most are directed at a specific group, person, or institution in which the perpetrator has a grievance. A Huffington Post analysis of mass shootings between 2009 and 2015 found that 57% involved either a current or former intimate partner or a family member of the perpetrator, and 70% occurred in a private home. Though, you know, large-scale mass shootings get much more media attention, smaller-scale mass shootings in the U.S. are just as deadly, and unfortunately, each day, approximately 104 people die from gun violence. There's another myth that there's no link between domestic violence and gun violence. 9 out of the 10 deadliest mass shootings in the U.S. in the past 50 years were perpetrated by men who had committed violence against women, threatened against women, or disparaged women. So Every Town for Gun Safety has analyzed FBI data on mass shootings from 2009 to 2016 and found that 34% of mass shootings involved a shooter who was prohibited from owning firearms, including many who had a history of domestic violence. These domestic violence-related mass shootings resulted in 422 victims being killed, and 181 of them were children. Whereas all of the mass shootings between 2009 and 2016, domestic violence and non-domestic violence related, resulted in a total of 848 people being killed and another 339 injured. So again, looking a little bit more at domestic violence and mass shootings, 1 in 4 victims of a mass shooting is a child. This may be due to the fact that many of these attacks are rooted in domestic violence, with the shooter victimizing their own children. The connection between mass shootings and domestic violence may partly be explained by the common role that guns play in instances of domestic violence. Each month in the U.S., an average of 50 women are shot to death through intimate partner violence. More than half of all women killed by intimate partners of the U.S. are killed with guns. When a gun is present in a domestic violence situation, it is 5 times more likely to end in fatality. Now, another myth out there is that right-to-carry laws decrease crime. And right-to-carry laws are laws such as our concealed carry weapons permitting system, which here in North Carolina, you have to be at least 21 years old, undergo 8 hours of classroom training and live fire training in order to carry a hidden loaded weapon in public. And in fact, expansive concealed carry weapons permitting laws are linked to an increase in violent crime. A 2017 study by researchers at Stanford University found that 10 years after adopting a right to carry law, states experience a 13 to 15% rise in violent crimes. And, you know, unfortunately, armed civilians are rarely able to deter or interrupt crimes, including mass shootings. An FBI analysis found that unarmed civilians are more than 20 times more likely than an armed civilian to stop an active shooting. Another myth that is out there is that mental illness is behind most gun violence, when in fact, 4% of violence against others is caused by the symptoms of serious mental illness, such as schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. So if it's not mental illness, what are some stronger factors for gun violence? We're looking at impulsivity, anger, traumatic life events such as a job loss or divorce, problematic alcohol or drug abuse. In 42% of cases, shooters presented warning signs, indicated that they might be of harm to themselves or others. Red flags may include acts, attempted acts, or threats of self to harm oneself and or others, violation of protective orders, evidence of ongoing substance abuse, and there's a really innovative law called an extreme risk protection order, which allows an individual to petition a judge to have somebody's guns removed temporarily if they are in a crisis situation. So if they see them exhibiting some of these red flags, and we feel that if this law had been in place in California before the San Bernardino shooting, it probably would have prevented that shooting because family members had contacted law enforcement and pleaded with them, but there was nothing law enforcement could do to remove the guns before a crime had occurred. And unfortunately, mental illness is a strong risk factor for suicide. Another myth is that owning a gun makes you safer. Owning a gun increases the risk of gun-related homicides and suicides. Higher levels of gun ownership are linked to higher rates of unintentional firearm deaths. In 2014, for every self-defense gun homicide in the U.S., there were 34 criminal gun homicides. Now, if we look at, does a gun in your home really protect you? In fact, only 2% of the time is a gun in the home used for self-protection or against an intruder, while 3% of the time it's used for an unintentional child shooting. 12% of the time it's used for a shooting member of a family or member or friend, and 83% of the time for suicide. Another myth that is out there is that gun laws don't work because criminals will not obey the laws. The fact that some individuals will violate any given law is not a sound reason for eliminating those laws altogether. A 2016 Center for American Progress study found that the 10 states with the weakest gun laws had an aggregate level of gun violence that is 3 times higher than the 10 states with the strongest gun laws. And we see that there are multiple gun laws that do work and have been proven to save lives, such as a permit to purchase system. Here in North Carolina, we have our pistol purchase permitting system. What this is if you want to buy a handgun, you have to go to your sheriff's department and undergo a background check and to be able to purchase that handgun, no matter where you want to buy that handgun, including online or at gun shows. This is really important because our federal background check system only applies when you buy a gun from a federally licensed dealer. That means if you're a domestic violence abuser, convicted felon, minor, somebody experiencing a mental health crisis, you can go to a gun show or online and buy a gun, no questions asked. But here in North Carolina, we have closed that loophole with our pistol purchase permitting system. And that, unfortunately, has been under attack for several years in the state legislature. But we and our allies have been able to fight that back, so we today still have our pistol purchase permitting system. When a similar law like that was passed in Connecticut, they saw their gun violence rate go down by 40%. In Missouri, when a similar law was repealed, they saw their gun homicide rate go up by 25%. So if we look here in North Carolina, in 2015, there were 1,247 firearm-related deaths right here at home. 62.1% of the firearm-related deaths were suicides. 2014, 47 children died in North Carolina as a result of a firearm. And it's the second leading cause of death for 0 to 17-year-olds behind automobile accidents. And a little bit more about facts of guns in the home. Nearly 40% of gun-owning households with children have an unlocked gun to which a child may gain access. One of the things I'm going to point out at the end is that you can give away gun locks to people, either yourself, can take them for a family member or friend, or for yourself, or to share them in your congregations. I have plenty in the back that people are willing to, can take for free, and you can also contact me or your local sheriff's department to get more. A gun in the home is much more likely to kill a family member or friend than to be used in self-defense. And 72% of unintentional youth firearm deaths, suicides, and injuries, the gun was stored either in the residence of the victim or that of a relative or friend. And the presence of a gun in the home increases the risk of suicide fivefold. Now I'd like to get into a little bit more about our legislation and legislative victories. Here at home, here in North Carolina, in 2015, House Bill 562, or the Second Amendment Affirmation Act, was passed. This bill at first was a really egregious bill. They tried to do away with our successful pistol purchase permitting system. They tried to allow stalkers to get a concealed carry weapons permit right after 5 years after their conviction. And they tried to say that doctors could not talk to their patients about guns and gun safety. But because of our work and the allies that we work with, including Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, who's here today, and the faith community, the North Carolina Council of Churches and individual congregations, we were able to stop the corporate gun lobby and strike those provisions from that bill. So that was a huge victory. Our victories continued in North Carolina in 2017. They again tried to do away with the pistol purchase permitting system. They also tried to allow hidden loaded weapons on college campuses, at UNC system college campuses and community college campuses. Now these two bills were put together and scheduled for a hearing on the day of crossover. So that's the day that bill has to pass one chamber to be considered alive for the rest of the session. They scheduled that hearing for 10 o'clock. They pushed it back to 1 o'clock. They pushed it back to in-between session, and they finally had to cancel it. That was because people got involved and they emailed and they called and they visited and they showed up, and the Republicans in their caucus just didn't have the vote, so they did not schedule that hearing. Now, unfortunately, a bill did pass the North Carolina House. This is the elimination of our concealed carry weapons permitting system. If this bill becomes law, it would mean that 18-year-olds with no training could carry a hidden loaded weapon in public. Now, we are strongly against this, our allies are strongly against this, law enforcement is strongly against it, and even though it did pass the House, 8 Republicans and all of the Democrats voted against the bill, which means that if it passes the Senate and if the governor vetoes it, there's enough votes to sustain that veto. But we need people to stay involved and to stay contacting their legislators to make sure that those courageous legislators keep their votes the way that they originally did them. Now, unfortunately, at the federal level, we're facing some stronger challenges. Today, there is a hearing in the House Rules Committee on a bill that is called the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. It basically means that any state has to allow somebody with a permit from another state into their state. Now, this is a problem for states that have strong concealed carry weapons permitting system with strong training requirements, and some states don't have any training requirements, and they would have to let them into their states. So again, multiple organizations are opposed to this. Law enforcement is opposed to it. It's going to be heard today and probably on the floor tomorrow. So definitely contact your member of Congress. It's House Bill 38. We'll have more information on that, or you can talk to me about that at the end. So those are some things that we are concerned about that is happening at the federal level. But I'd like to end with ways that you can get involved. You know, sometimes when we hear this information, it can seem very overwhelming. The statistics and the stories are simply horrifying. But there are things that each of us as individuals, as faith communities, can do to make a difference. Simple things like writing letters to the editor, contacting your local media, hosting a house party to share information or to raise money, data entry, table to educate and get new supporters, calling people on the phone. We do phone banks to our supporters. Meet with, call, email, or your legislators. As I talked about, that is so crucial and so important. Volunteer your professional services. We're a partner in the Ask campaign, or Asking Saves Kids. This is run by the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence and the American Academy of Pediatrics. It's very simple, of caregivers asking other caregivers if there are guns in the home and if they're stored safely. And finally, to distribute gun locks, and if you're interested of having a conversation in your faith community about whether or not you want to allow guns in your faith community. Because right now, anyone can bring a gun into a congregation unless there is a sign posted. In addition, anyone can bring a gun into a restaurant or bar unless there is a sign posted. We have stickers that people can contact those establishments or your own faith institution. We're happy to give those away free of charge. And with that, I thank you so much for your time and look forward to talking with you.